All right, so like imagine you're in court, right,
Yeah.
facing some serious charges. You'd want to be there for everything, wouldn't you? For every witness, every piece of evidence, to hear all the legal arguments and everything.
Of course.
But what if like something happened when you weren't there? Something that could like totally change the jury's decision.
Yeah, that would be a big problem.
Exactly. And that's like what Mitchell v. State is all about.
It's a 1958 Maryland case.
It really digs into this whole idea of a defendant's right to be present, like at every stage of their trial.
You know, it's not just about being physically present in the
Oh,
room.
yeah.
It's about fairness, right? Like ensuring that the whole trial is fair.
Right.
And this case really shows how even a, seemingly small communication between the judge and the jury without the defendant there can have a huge impact on the outcome.
And I mean, this case wasn't about some minor offense either.
No, not at all.
This was serious stuff. Like Midget and whoever he was with, they were accused of robbing a police officer.
Yeah, and kidnapping.
They even tied him up and took his equipment.
It was a big deal.
Wow.
And even with a case this serious, the court was very clear.
Oh, yeah.
They said the defendant's right to be present can't be waived, like no matter what. And the court's opinion uses like really strong language to make that point. They actually say this right extends from jury impanelment to verdict.
Wow, they really wanted to emphasize that.
Absolutely.
So, what exactly happened in this case that caused such a problem?
So while the jury was trying to decide the verdict,
Okay.
they sent a note to the judge asking about the death penalty. They wanted to know if being found guilty of kidnapping would automatically mean a death sentence.
Interesting.
And the judge, probably trying to be helpful, reassured them that it wouldn't. Now, on the surface, that might seem like, just a simple clarification.
It kind of sounds like a simple question and answer, right?
Right?
So why was this such a problem?
Well, the problem was that Midget and his lawyer weren't there for this whole exchange. And even though the judge was probably just trying to be helpful,
Right.
it could have influenced how the jury made their decision.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Like, knowing the death penalty wasn't an option,
Right.
they might have been more likely to convict.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the court really emphasized this, saying any communication, especially anything that could change how the jury understands the case or the potential penalties, has to include the defendant.
So it's not just about the defendant literally being in the room.
No.
It's about them being able to be a part of everything that could affect what happens to them.
Exactly. And that's what's so important about Midget. It really shows how important transparency and accountability are in the judicial process. By making sure the defendant is there, you prevent even the appearance of bias.
Right.
And it ensures that justice isn't just done, but that people can see it being done fairly.
Yeah.
That's huge. And Midget really highlights how crucial the lawyer's role is in all of this, like protecting their client's rights, Imagine, right? You're in the middle of a trial
Right.
and the judge, they call for a sidebar with the lawyers.
Okay.
Might seem routine, but
Right.
what if they talk about something that could actually hurt your client? Like, what if the judge says something, even accidentally, that could influence the jury?
Yeah. That's a great point.
It's a real risk.
It sounds like Midget is like this constant reminder for lawyers, Like, hey, stay alert.
Oh, yeah.
Every interaction between the judge and jury, even the small ones, you got to think about them carefully.
Absolutely. And it goes beyond the courtroom, too, Think about jury
Oh,
instructions.
yeah.
Judges usually give them instructions in writing, right, to use while they're deciding the verdict.
Right.
But what if a juror doesn't get something? What if they send a note to the judge asking for clarification?
Okay, so let's say I'm the defense attorney then. Judy sends a note. Judge wants to clarify. What do I do?
Well, first thing, you got to make sure your client is there for any communication between the judge and jury. That right to be present. It can't be waived, not even by you.
Okay.
Then think about what the judge might say, Could their answer hurt your client's case? Will it make the law clearer in a way that actually helps the prosecution?
So it's like walking a tightrope, right?
Yeah.
You want the jury to understand the law, but
Yeah.
you also have to be a strong advocate for your client. You got to make sure they're not getting a raw deal because of something said when they weren't even there.
Exactly. And that's why cases like Midget are so important for lawyers, I think. They show how these like procedural things, they might seem small, but they can really change how a trial ends.
Right.
The right to be present isn't just some technicality. It's like fundamental to the whole justice system.
And it's not just about fairness for the defendant.
Right. No.
It's about the public trusting the system too.
Exactly. When trials are open, transparent, everyone's rights respected, it makes the whole system stronger. It shows people that justice is being done, and it's being done fairly.
You mentioned earlier, Midget wasn't like creating a brand new law.
Yeah.
It was more like confirming something that was already there.
Yeah.
So how has this right to be present changed over time?
It's pretty interesting to see how far back it goes, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The Midget Court, they even looked at English common law, cited Blackstone's commentaries. That shows they understood, like, centuries ago that a defendant should be there to hear the evidence, confront their accusers, all that, to be a part of their own defense.
That really puts things into perspective. To think this basic right has been around for so long.
I know.
It really says something about how important it is.
It really does. And nowadays, with more and more trials happening online,
right,
this right is even more crucial.
That's a great point. How does this right to be present work in a world where trials are like going virtual?
That's a big question.
What new problems and stuff do we have to think about in the digital world?
We have to make sure the same safeguards we have in a physical courtroom are in place online too, you know, to protect that right to be present.
Right.
It's a big shift.
So for example, if someone's testifying over video,
yeah,
does the defendant still have to be in the same room as their lawyer? Or can they be somewhere else but still participate online?
That's what courts are struggling with now, you know, no easy answers.
Right.
Some people say being there virtually is enough, as long as the defendant can see and hear everything and talk to their lawyer.
Yeah.
Others say no, being physically present is still important, even if it's virtual, to really make sure the trial is fair.
It sounds really complicated.
Oh, it is. And it's always changing. It's something lawyers, judges, everyone's paying attention to as we figure out this new world of virtual justice. Mm.
Makes you think about access to justice too, right?
Absolutely.
If virtual trials become normal,
yeah,
will it be easier for defendants to participate? Like people in rural areas or who have trouble getting around?
That's one good thing that could come out of it for sure. Virtual trials could make things more accessible.
But then are there concerns about, you know, does everyone have the technology they need to be part of a virtual trial?
Yeah, for sure.
And how do you keep things formal and respectful online?
Yeah.
Like we expect in a physical courtroom.
Those are all good points, and just a few of the challenges we got to figure out as we move forward with all this.
It feels like we're just at the start of a really big conversation about how technology is changing the justice system.
We are. And cases like Midget, even though they were decided way before virtual courts, they give us a way to think about these changes.
Yeah.
They remind us that no matter how technology changes things, the basic ideas of fairness, due process, the right to a fair trial, those have to stay central.
It really is amazing to think, you know, some of these really core legal ideas, they're still relevant even after all this time.
I know, right?
Centuries.
It's like we've gone from, you know, writing with feathers and ink to screens and algorithms and all that.
Yeah.
But the core of justice, that hasn't changed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why these cases like Midget, they're so important.
Oh, yeah.
Especially for law students, I think.
Yeah.
They really set the foundation.
They do.
Not just for knowing the rules, but for understanding, you know, that spirit of fairness that's behind it all.
Right. Like the whole point of the system.
Okay. So let's pretend we're back in law school.
Right.
Cramming for that criminal procedure exam.
Oh, I remember those days.
Midget v. State is on the syllabus. What's the one thing we have to remember?
I'd say the big takeaway is that, you know, the right to be present at a felony trial, it's absolute.
Okay.
And it can't be waived. But it's not just memorizing the rule, right?
Right.
You got to know how to actually use it in different situations. Like, think about what happens if, say, the judge gets a note from the jury while they're deliberating.
Yeah.
Or there's a question about evidence that needs to be explained.
Hmm.
Or even if, like, there's some outburst in the courtroom and the judge needs to talk to the lawyers privately.
So it's about recognizing those moments, even if they seem small.
Yeah.
Where the defendant absolutely has to be there.
Exactly.
And knowing how to fight for that right.
Exactly. And, you know, For anyone who really wants to dive in deep,
yeah,
the full Majid opinion is worth a read. It really gets into the details of how this right has been interpreted, especially in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And it mentions other cases and legal principles that can help you understand this whole area of law better.
It's like a masterclass, all in one case.
Pretty much. And it takes us back to that question we were talking about before about balancing efficiency with fairness. You know,
right, right.
And making sure individual rights are protected.
It's an ongoing challenge.
It is. And Midget reminds us why those safeguards are so important.
Yeah.
They're not just like abstract ideas.
Yeah.
They have real consequences for real people. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Midget v. State, what's the final takeaway for our listeners? We talked about the history of the right to be present, why it's so important in a regular courtroom, and all the new things we have to think about with virtual trials.
Right.
But what about the future? How do you think this right is going to change as technology keeps evolving?
It's a big question. It feels like we're at the very beginning of some really huge changes in how justice works, you know?
I agree. And I think as we figure out how to deal with all these changes, it's super important to remember those principles that have guided our legal system for so long.
Yeah.
This right to be present, however it looks in the future, it'll always be a key part of a fair legal system.
Right.
And it's up to all of us, lawyers, judges, the people making the technology, even regular people, to make sure that right is protected.
In the virtual world and in the real world.
Absolutely.
It's been a really insightful look at a case that, you know, even though it's decided so long ago, it still matters so much today. And for anyone who wants to dig deeper, we'll include links to the Midget Opinion, articles about virtual trials, and even some other podcasts about law and technology. Thanks for listening.